gunshot wounds. 44 of those persons were suicides. 10 are said to be victims of accidental shootings. And 64 of those persons were murdered. That's this week so far. Is it an unusual week? Well, the average for last year was 125 persons murdered by guns each week. So we are actually running a little behind, but then the week isn't over. All in all, last year, guns were involved in 6,500 murders in the United States. That compares with 30 gun murders in England, 99 in Canada, 68 in West Germany, 37 in Japan, and the 6,500 figure does not include the 10,000 suicides by gun and the 2,600 accidental killings by gun. Of course, guns are only one weapon of violence. Some 50,000 people died in automobiles in this country last year. It's a figure we live with, and we don't seem too concerned about it. As a headline said last week, and we quote, "Violence is as American as apple pie," unquote. We are a violent nation. And the question we are asking tonight is why? And what can we do about it? Our guest is anthropologist Dr. Margaret Mead, author of many books, student of human behavior, and professor at Columbia University. Good evening, Dr. Mead.
Good evening.
Dr. Mead, why are we, Americans, such a violent people? I believe you feel it has a great deal to do with how we raise our children.
Well, I feel also it has a great deal to do, of course, with our past. That in our pioneer past, we felt that to be armed and to defend oneself was good. And one of our major problems is that we see guns in the hands of the bad man and the hands of the good man. Now, our children are reared with a picture of what is brave behavior, what is good behavior. The good guy, armed with a gun, confronts the bad guy, armed with a gun. And, of course, the bad guy uses the gun for bad reasons, and the good guy uses the gun for good reasons. But the gun is in the hands of both. And as we become more and more of a city people, we have less and less reason to use guns. We have less chance to train our children, as our great-grandparents trained them, to handle guns with respect and care. And so we're becoming both a people who don't understand or respect guns and a people who use and have used too many guns, have them too available. And we've been giving guns to our small boys as a way of telling them they're boys, little boys that don't have any chance to really develop their muscles or to run real risks. They don't get a chance to swim. They don't get a chance to run. They don't get a chance to climb trees. Instead, they strap on toy guns and say, "Bang, bang, you're dead," while they watch on television the good guys shooting the bad guys. So whether they identify with the bad guy or the good guy, the gun becomes something that is part of our lives. And with this number of guns around, both toy guns and real guns, the result is an enormous number of people get killed.
Do you view the gun as some kind of masculine symbol?
Yes, I think, you see, every society has to have some way of telling boys they're boys and girls that they're girls. Now, long ago in primitive society, the bow and arrow belonged to boys, the spear belonged to boys, the javelin belonged to boys. Weapons in the hunt and in war were given to boys as a sign that they were men and they were brave. And this is very old. And I think it's very important, especially for little boys initially, to know that they're strong and to know that they're brave. But the gun has just become a symbol of bravery. Instead of their learning to be really fearless and really take risks and handle them well and learn to control their own bodies and be proud of how they control them, they've been given a symbol that it doesn't take anything, any skill or any bravery to control at all. So it's a kind of cheap substitute for real masculinity.
Well, in a society where most adult males are being deprived of an opportunity to exercise whatever form of masculinity they may have, This does not leave much choice for the mother who has a son except to give him a gun, right?
Well, I think we give her a choice very quickly. This country is a country that can change almost overnight, that can turn against some practice that we've had for a very long time. We have all the methods in radio and television and magazines to spread an idea very quickly over the country. And I think almost overnight, if we now take this feeling that is welling up all over the United States, and every woman's organization and every mother in the country demanded stricter and stricter gun controls, stopping selling guns, stopping providing the same tremendous number of toy guns, this could change very quickly. And then we could find other forms for our little boys. And because it's much more important, really, what we give our little boys. There are many, many ways in which a grown man can show his masculinity, but we're rather short of things for small boys.
I'm only curious in this aspect, Dr. Mead, what would you offer to the boys in place of a gun, in place of this gun that's used as a symbol?
Well, I'd offer them a great deal more good outside sport, great many more chances to climb, to leap, to jump, to swim, to dive, where they could test themselves and test themselves against other boys and know that their bodies are strong. And I think also I would teach them to do what in our own sort of English-speaking tradition we've called fair fighting. That is to use their fists, but use them in a controlled way so as not to maim and not to hurt and not to hit below the belt. And I think they ought to be taught by men how to fight in a limited way and not to kill as strong, responsible people.
The number of young men who are currently joining the armed forces and the number who are being sent to Vietnam,
I don't hear you.
Oh, I'm sorry. I said the number of young men who are currently going... joining the armed services and volunteering for the armed services, do you see the attraction to the armed services as a condition or as part of their attempts to show their masculinity, or is it based on patriotism only?
Well, I think it's based on a great many things. It's based on a desire to end uncertainty, to make some kind of clear choice. It's based on what other young men of the same age are doing. And, of course, through history, we have tied patriotism to a willingness to die for your own country. And therefore, it's been a sign of manhood and to, on the one hand, abstain from injuring or killing a member of your own group, and on the other hand, a willingness to die for your own country.
Can we have bravery without guns? Our subject tonight, our guest here in New York City, Dr. Margaret Mead. And Dr. Mead, we're going to welcome our first phone call right from New York from Mr. Nesbitt, who's listening tonight call over radio station WLIB-FM. Welcome tonight call, sir.
One question for Dr. Mead. Isn't bravery a sort of inner thing that you have to define for yourself? It doesn't necessarily have to be a gun, does it? But the way I see it, bravery is associated at all times with violence.
No, I think you've asked two questions. One, is bravery an inner thing? Well, bravery is something that you have to test against other people's opinion. I don't believe there are very many people that are convinced that they're brave unless they have a chance to demonstrate it in some way, to try it out, to be sure it was so, to have witnesses that were there. There are very few people who can assure themselves they were brave if all they do to be brave is something no one else ever knows about. So it is an inner strength, but it has to be affirmed by other people. And certainly, guns are not necessary for bravery. We have simply turned the use of guns into something in our own society where we've tied them up with bravery, and I think that's a mistake. It's simply something we've done historically, and we could stop.
Another question. How can the black man affirm bravery in America without killing? Your opinion on this?
Well, I don't think that bravery and killing are necessarily tied together at all. So that I don't think it's necessary for anybody to kill to prove they're brave. It may be necessary, as long as we have war, to be willing to enlist in an army, which means you may kill or be killed. But within your own society, within our own society, we do not need to kill in order to be brave, but we need to be able to stand up and stand up to things. Killing doesn't mean bravery, but being willing, being able to stand up against the danger of killing, that's where the bravery really lies.
But we know that, but we want a suggestion from you, being that you're a qualified anthropologist.
No, but you say you know this. Now, then what do you want me to suggest?
I just wanted to know, how long do you think it would take to re-educate America, to re-socialize them, to re-evaluate and establish new norms to what you're saying?
I don't think it would take very long. I think we can establish new norms enormously quickly in this country. If you consider the difference in the way this country feels about war now and the way we felt at the time of the Korean War, there's a fantastic difference, and it's a very short period.
But we're not talking about war as such. We're talking about the average individual carrying a gun.
Yes, but if you look at the change that's been going on even in the last 2 weeks, I think that we could very quickly change the attitude towards guns if everybody in the country, which means all the mass media, all the opinion formers, all the performers and entertainers, and the members of clubs and organizations and women's clubs and all of these things, if everybody got interested, we could do it very fast. We wouldn't have to re-socialize anybody. We would have to establish a wave of feeling which everybody could join in terms of their older feelings about what's done in this country.
That's all I have to say.
Thank you for calling, Mr. Nesbitt.
Thank you.
This is NyCall in New York. Our national telephone number is area code 212-749-3311. That's area code 212-749-3311. You may, of course, call Collect, and we welcome your conversation and your comments. Our local number is 866-5010. That's 866-5010. We'll welcome our next Night Call listener, Mr. Grimshaw, who's listening to Night Call over radio station KLIQ-FM in Portland, Oregon. Welcome to Night Call, sir.
Hello, Mr. Shields.
Yes, sir.
Mrs. Mead is listening?
Yes, she is.
Fine. Hello. As an anthropologist, is that correct?
Right.
You can state without any qualification that there is no superior type of race. Isn't that true?
Yes.
Each of our different types of races worldwide can equally attain as far as mentality or physically. Isn't that true?
Yes, there are differences between some racial groups in terms of size, you know.
Yes.
And we can't say that pygmies will be the same kind of jumpers as 7-foot-tall people.
Right.
But in terms of the capacity to learn anything that human beings have developed, other human beings of other races can learn. And we know of no handicaps between races in terms of what they can learn.
That is wonderful for you to say, and I think that is something that needs to be stressed more often as a true fact. Then I'm interested in the aspect of rivalry between peoples.
Mr. Grimshaw, I'm going to ask you if you'd be kind enough to hold your call while we break for station identification and stay on the line, and we'll be coming right back.
Thank you.
Stay tuned for the Night Call Network.
More Night Call with Dal Shields and guest Margaret Mead after station identification. Night Call, the nationwide listener call-in show, brings you these guests next week and lets you ask them questions directly on these vital issues. Monday, June 24th, Chairman John Gardner of the National Urban Coalition on the revolt of the moderate. Tuesday, June 25th, Vice President David Truman of Columbia University on Who's Running the Campus. Wednesday, June 28th, H. Rapp Brown on What Black Power Really Means. Thursday, June 27th, Jackie Robinson, who says the church right now is a joke in race relations. And Friday, June 28th, sociology professor Kenneth Clark asks, is integration out of date? And in succeeding weeks, we'll be talking to all of the major presidential candidates and other distinguished guests, such as Ralph McGill, Bill Cosby, Governor Lester Maddox, Mayor Alioto of San Francisco, Mayor Stokes of Cleveland, and Mayor Lindsay of New York. All on Night Call, where you speak for yourself each weeknight on this station. Speak for yourself. Collect on Night Call. Area code 212-749-3311 or 866-5010 to Margaret Mead about bravery without guns. Again, Del Shields.
Identity depends upon...
This is Night Call in New York, and we're just returning, Dr. Mead. I'm sorry we gave you an early cue. And Dr. Mead is talking with Mr. Grimshaw from Portland, Oregon. And Mr. Grimshaw, if you'd be kind enough to repeat the question.
Well, the question that I wish to ask Dr. Shields, if it isn't true that rivalry between groups, the willingness to fight to the death, is not a learned characteristic. I think that actually human beings have more of a wish to get along together.
Well, I think you have to say that human beings have a capacity to identify themselves as a member of a group. Now, if that group's identity is that they are the rivals of another group, whether it's Harvard and Yale, you know, or the Marines and the Air Force and the Navy, or France and Germany, whatever groups think of each other as rivals, then those people who grow up in each group will tend to identify themselves and want to fight with the other group. Which group you identify is learned, and it's possible to identify with the whole human race.
Yeah, that would seem to me to be the most desirable thing. Thank you very much, Dr. Mead.
Thank you for calling, sir.
Bye.
This is Night Call in New York. Our national telephone number is area code 212. That's area code 212-749-3311. The telephone number again is 749-3311. That's our national telephone number. Remember, you may call, collect. We welcome your conversation and your comments. And our local telephone number in New York is 866-5010. That's 866-5010. Well, welcome our next Night Call listener, Mr. Hillman, who's listening to Night Call. He's from Scarsdale, New York, and he's tuned in to WLIB-FM in New York. Welcome to Night Call, sir.
Hello, Mrs. Mead?
Yes?
I read your book on social patterns and technical change.
Yes?
And in it, one of the concepts, I think, was that to introduce change in a society, you have to understand the different aspects of the society. Like, we can't send people into the Tiv tribe in Nigeria and change to a cash crop, for instance, because it might not taste right to them, right?
Yes.
Now, if we're going to take away guns in America, now, you said before on the show that, you know, you think that this can be done, like, practically overnight. Now, isn't this going to cause in itself a major social upset? Is it going to be that easy to change something that's been going on in our society for a long time overnight, just like changing the corn in
Well, we know a good deal more than when I edited that book. That book was done right after the war, and where all our experience of change was of people on whom change had been imposed by other people, by, you know, imperial nations or missionaries or kings or somebody. We now know that if people want to make a change themselves, and they make it very fast, that it works better than if they drag the change along. The longer they drag it, the more the opposition again builds up. So that today we can say that if you can make a change very fast that people want and ask for, this is probably the best way to try to change something.
Are you sure that the people in America definitely want this and are asking for it? A lot of people are dissenting against it.
I'm pretty sure that the bulk of women in this country want it, for one thing.
Mm-hmm.
And if every woman in this country that doesn't want her child to kill or be killed, mm-hmm. would do something at once, this would make an enormous difference. You can't expect everybody is going to want things, but if a sufficiently large number wants them, this has a great effect on the others also.
Well, all I can say is that I hope you're right, and I hope this thing can be done. And it was a pleasure talking to you, and you too, Mr. Shields.
Thank you for calling, sir.
Thank you very much.
Thank
Bye.
You.
But Mr. Shields, you know the point is that it won't be done unless people do something.
It will not be done, Doctor?
Unless people do something.
Well, now, what can the people do? And while you're preparing to answer that...
Every single person in this country who cares about this ought to be writing to Congress right now. Writing to their congressmen and to their senators and writing original letters, not group letters that are set up by any organization or postal cards, writing their own letter in their own handwriting to their own congressmen. Because the Congress cares about this and they respond to changes. And they should be writing also to their own radio stations and their own TV stations. And to the sponsors of the shows on their own TV stations, all of whom care what people think.
Do you think, Doctor, that if the women began to rally around this particular idea, that some changes might be made?
Yeah, I think changes are on their way. I mean, we've seen a tremendous shift in the last 2 weeks. If we don't get tired, but the trouble with this country is we get all excited, and then if something doesn't happen immediately, we get tired.
Well, Doctor, we have two ladies on the line, so let's take the first one from Indianapolis, Indiana. Miss Ward is listening to Night Call over radio station WTLC. Welcome to Night Call, Miss Ward.
Yes, I'm very glad to be on, but I think my question has already been answered. I had a question prepared earlier, and it's been answered. I just heard the answer to it about the senators and your congressmen, and I was going to ask, what can be individually done?
Do you know who your senators are and your congressmen?
Yes, I do.
Fine.
Write them tomorrow.
I will do that. Thank you so much.
Thank you for calling.
Bye.
We'll return to New York. Mrs. Hollis is listening to Night Call over radio station WLIB-FM. Welcome to Night Call.
Thank you. Dr. Mead?
Yes.
The question that I have, while agreeing entirely with the influence of media and what you say about toys and what you say about what we can do about it, I've always had one question about the pioneer frontier tradition being the principal influence. And that is that, you know, vast, vast percentage of us, I don't know what percentage it is, but I'd be very curious to know sometime, are really first and second generation and primarily influenced by either by European tradition or tradition of whatever part of the world we or they have come from. How does this operate in, you know, how has it been so influential on people who are so recently here and whose parents are so strongly influenced by another tradition?
But you see, each of our ancestors, as they came here, have wanted to bring their children up to be Americans. And especially for European immigrants who came because they chose to come, they've been very anxious for their children to adopt the customs of this country, to read the stories and sing the songs and have the heroes that belonged to the country they've come to. We've encouraged the children, wherever they came from, originally, to give up the customs of their ancestors and take the customs of this country. Of course, this hasn't been a pioneer country for quite a long time, and there are millions of people here that have never had anything to do with pioneers. But nevertheless, they've grown up with a tradition that's become part of our folklore and that they see day after day on films and on television.
And the saturation is really that fast, that it penetrates that quickly.
It comes very, very quickly. The second generation, in many instances, are more devoted to what they think this country stands for than people who've been here longer.
Yes, I think that is perfectly true in some cases. I just didn't really realize that was... I thought perhaps a large part of it was a transfer from societies which are either necessarily very repressive or just have a really tight, strong, rigid tradition that has not been broken in you know, familial, rigid or tight or close familial relationships. And that it was this removal from a, you know, either repressive or just a well-developed tradition to a terribly permissive and terribly undeveloped dispersed one that had an awful lot to do with...
Well, you see, I think the people who came to this country, when we're speaking of Europeans and to some extent of Asians are people who came because they wanted to, and they were lively and adventurous and up and coming. And they thought they were coming to a new kind of world that was different from the one they came from. And that has certainly encouraged parents to let their children take their own way and to give up the kind of authority that existed in older societies.
Yeah, because I didn't mean that pejoratively in relation to the other societies. It's been very good in many cases, and in some cases, you know, less good, but simply it was so different. Thank you very much.
Thank you for calling, Mrs. Hollis. This is Night Call in New York. Our national telephone number is area code 212-749-3311. That's 749-3311. Remember, we welcome your calls, and you may call us collect. Our local telephone number in New York is 866-5010. That's 866-5010. And tonight our guest is Dr. Margaret Mead, who is right here in New York, and we are discussing tonight bravery. We'll take our next caller from Newark, New Jersey. Mrs. Allgood is listening to Night Call over radio station WLIB-FM. Welcome to Night Call. Mrs. Allgood?
Yes.
Welcome to Night Call.
I didn't want to get on the air.
I beg your pardon?
I didn't want to get on the air.
Oh, well, you called. All right. We'll take you off then. Thank you for calling. This is Night Call in New York, area code 212-749-3311. That's area code 212-749-3311. Our local telephone number is 866-5010. Dr. Mead, may we talk for a moment about television? What is your opinion of the violence that's being portrayed on television, and is it a factor?
Well, I think there's several kinds. There's the kind of violence that is a Western, that is clearly fiction, but that nevertheless affects children in giving them notions of what is good and what is bad, who's a hero, who's a good guy, and who's a bad guy. And that affects their basic moral attitude towards life, and if guns are part of that picture, guns get mixed up, as I said earlier. Now, in the second place, we show a great deal of violence on television that looks like real life. It isn't clear to children that this is fiction. The people are dressed like people they know. This, I think, does a terrific amount of harm. Then, today we are showing the Vietnam War. Every night, night after night, the war is coming into our dining rooms and our living rooms. I think that this is making people more sensitive to the fact that war is always cruel, that in every war, both sides are inevitably cruel, and this is something that the American people didn't realize, because for such a long time, all the fighting that we've done has been done in other countries, and we had no way of appreciating that our troops, as well as other people's troops, were involved in the cruelty of war. From this point of view, I think we have increased our sensitivity and our objection to violence.
Well, what advice would you give to the television producers and the networks?
Well, I would suggest, one, that they cut down on violent shows of all sorts, that they cut down particularly on the shows which involve guns. At present, as we're trying to work so hard on guns, I think they should look particularly hard at guns. I think they should cut down on the percentage of violence that occurs on the screen, and particularly cut down on anything that looks as if it were violence engaged in by people like ourselves, or our fathers, or our brothers, or our cousins. Because it's impossible for children to tell the difference between what they see on the television screen and real life, and they come to believe that this is the way that everyone behaves. And also, I would suggest that we cut down on the glorification of violence. We stop doing the sort of thing that Life magazine does of putting assassins on the cover. As they did, they put Lee Harvey Oswald twice on the cover. Now, when a national magazine of the importance of life puts on the cover of the magazine an assassin who's killed the President of the United States, and this week again puts two assassins on the cover, this is the sort of thing that promotes violence, and of course is repeated on television also in the close-ups that we give of people who have committed violent crimes.
Dr. Mead, we're going to ask you to take just a moment out, and we'll be coming back to you right after station identification. This is Night Call. Stay tuned for the Night Call Network.
More Night Call with Del Shields and guest Margaret Mead after station identification. In our city and state, and all across the United States, people are talking about trouble, black and white trouble. Some call it racial tension, or see poverty as the real problem, or say law and order has given way to anarchy in our streets. Most people agree, at least, that there is a crisis, and we are a people with many unanswered questions. This station believes you deserve to ask your own questions and get some answers, or at least opinions, from people who should know what they're talking about. So we bring you Night Call, the new nationwide listener call-in show where you ask your questions and express your opinions to leaders such as John Lindsay, Ralph Abernathy, John Gardner, Stokely Carmichael, and Sergeant Shriver. Night Call, the new nationwide radio forum on important issues facing you and the rest of the nation. Night Call, each weeknight. Speak for yourself. Collect on Night Call, area code 212-749-3311 or 866-5010 to Margaret Mead about bravery without guns. Again, Del Shields.
And a welcome here in New York to all of the stations who join us for this second half hour. Tonight, can we have bravery without guns? And our guest, of course, Dr. Margaret Mead, who is also in New York.
Mr. Shields.
Yes.
I'm told that I wasn't particular enough in my phrasing. And, of course, the cover that was on Life magazine this week was on two possibly accused persons who have not yet been convicted. But I still think it is a very bad thing to do.
And you feel it's still glorification?
I feel it's a glorification, and we have a great deal of evidence that unstable young people feel when they see this kind of publicity that the way to get a reputation, especially if they haven't had an opportunity to gain one any other way, is to commit some spectacular crime.
Let's maybe explore that for just a moment, Dr. Mead. Since one psychiatrist said that assassins are faceless attention seekers, what motivates a person to do this when the thought should always be in mind, or we assume that the thought in mind, is that they will be caught? What kind of reward can they think of? Is it important to them to have this kind of attention for the moment?
Well, have you never heard the phrase that we quote to our children, one crowded hour of glorious life is worth an age without a name? We brought people up to believe it was glorious to die in war, that to die bravely and to receive acclaim and to receive honors and have your widow decorated was something worth doing. I mean, this is part of the whole tradition of bravery, has been dying for what you did. Now, this gets perverted in the case of people who commit crimes, but nevertheless, they get publicity, they get their names in the paper, and people look at them and with interest. And for many, many people in our society today, it's very hard to achieve a sense of identity. I don't think this is the only reason, but I think it's one of the things that is cultivated if there's too much notoriety given to people who are either accused of committing crimes or known to have committed them.
Is it possible that following an incident that has taken place, or the incidents which we have seen over the past couple of months and the past couple of years, does the American public become involved in sympathy for the person who is accused?
Well, traditionally in the United States, we've always taken the side of the underdog. We take the side of the person who stands up and is buffeted by fate. And there's always a possibility, therefore, that we will think that anyone who is being pursued, being disapproved of by the community, or being subjected to either the police or processes of law, there's always a tendency in the United States for us to take the side of that person. We have a tremendous capacity to identify with the underdog. And I think undoubtedly there are always people who will feel that any person who is accused by society of anything is deserving of sympathy.
We're going to go out to Ironwood, Michigan. Dr. Mead and Mr. Ben Lover is listening to Night Call over radio station WJMS. Welcome to Night Call, sir. Welcome to Night Call, sir. Hello?
Hello.
Yes, sir.
This is Ben Lover.
Right, sir.
I would like to ask Mrs. Mead, first off, if she thinks that... first, I'm saying she is strictly against guns as a rule, isn't that right? She doesn't believe in anyone owning guns.
It doesn't mean I don't believe that hunters should have guns.
I can't hear you, Mrs. Mead.
It does not mean that I think that we ought to stop hunting. It means that I think that guns should be very strictly controlled, that anyone who uses them should be taught to use them as a responsible activity, that they should be registered and kept in safe places, and they should not be loose in the society for children and disturbed people and criminals to get hold of.
Did you hear the response, Mr. Lover?
Well, I would like to ask this, I'd like to make this statement. There was my brother and I both served in, during World War II in the Army, both of us in Foreign Service, and I also had five brother-in-laws. We all served as, in the service, all in Foreign Service or in combat duty. One of them was killed on Salerno, but each one of us is a hunter. We don't hunt as enjoyment to kill or anything like that. It isn't the joy, it's maybe the sound that we hear, the little things we hear in the woods and stuff of that. This is something that's going to be taking care of us, or taking away from us. And the way things are going now.
I
can't believe it's that.
Nobody is suggesting that guns, or at least, I can't say nobody, because of course there's some people that are against all guns. But the legislation that is being proposed at present is not taking any rights away from hunters. And that cannot be repeated often enough. We're trying to get rid of this enormous number of guns that can get continually in the hands of the wrong people who don't know how to use them and use them for the wrong purposes.
Thank you for calling, Mr. Lover.
I can't hear what you're saying.
I said thank you for calling, sir. This is Night Call in New York, area code 212-749-3311. That's our national telephone number, area code 212-749-3311. And our local telephone number is 866-5010. In New York, it's 866-5010. Remember, if you're calling from out of town, you may call collect. We'll be more than happy to accept your call. We'll take our next call. Dr. Mead from Jacksonville, Florida. Mr. Kenneth Norris is listening to Night Call over radio station WRHC. Welcome to Night Call, sir.
Good evening.
Good evening.
I'd like to propose this idea to Dr. Mead. You speak of guns and bravery. What does a black man have to look back on as tradition here for guns and bravery? If you look at the movies today, the stories, the old Ned Budd lines, there's very little in the movies about the black man and gun. Even in old Tarzan movies, the Jujus had spears. He didn't have a gun. So where does the black man get this idea that he has to have a gun to be brave? Is it something that he copies from the white man?
Yes, I should think, you know, that the way this country has run always, we've tended to put in the movies and in our short stories and in our advertisements, stories about whoever were the majority group in this country. So that 50 years ago, most of our heroes were blonde. Then slowly they got brunette. And now black children share with white children. The films and the westerns, the TVs, and all the rest of it. And they get the same ideas of what constitutes masculinity and bravery from the mass media that the white children do. And so, regardless of the fact that, as you say, and I know it's true, that there has been an extraordinarily little use of guns by black people in this country through time, Nevertheless, the children do grow up sharing some of the same notions of bravery that with all the other children of other different racial groups in this country.
Another question or comment. With the gun control law being passed by the committee, I guess, and it'll probably be passed by the Senate and the House, what makes the president and other advocates of gun control legislation think that the criminal is not going to get a gun?
No, we don't think that the criminal is not going to get a gun entirely, but if you compare the number of murders and the number of crimes in which guns are used in this country and in other countries where there are stricter gun laws, we know that we can reduce the use of guns in crime. And if you reduce the use of guns in crime, you have fewer deaths. Just as we know that the English police were unarmed, and when England set up a police force that was unarmed, the country became less lawless, less violent than it was before. And this is the sort of thing that we're considering. The gun law will not cure crime. The gun law will simply reduce the number of people that are killed by guns, and it will reduce the number of people who are killed.
And Mr. Norris, if I could bring this out in our opening remarks tonight, we stated that there were 6,500 murders in the United States committed last year where guns were involved, which compared with 30 gun murders in England and 99 in Canada. So this bears out Dr. Mead's statement.
In comparison, do they have figures on murders that were committed by other instruments, knives, clubs, bottles, poisoning, etc.? Do you think that would cause an increase of this? If you can't kill a person with a gun, you think a person is going to kill a person? Wouldn't you kill him with something else?
The real question is, you know, if somebody is determined to be a murderer and is a carefully premeditated murderer, they can probably succeed in murdering someone else. It's a little harder to do it at extreme distance. But if you reduce the number of guns that are around, you have much less behavior on the spur of the moment. You don't have the householder who kills somebody they think is a burglar. You don't have the burglar who's armed and who kills the householder the minute he hears a noise. You reduce impulsive killing that comes from fright, from anger, from mistakes, and you tremendously reduce the number of murders and accidental deaths also.
Dr. Mead, if I may inject this, I'd like to ask a question at this moment. Would applying a stiffer sentence on people using guns in crimes, would this help to curb some of the violence?
Well, we don't on the whole find that stiff sentences are nearly as salutary as some people think they are. It does give some leverage to the law if a criminal having a gun makes him more liable to punishment. It makes, undoubtedly, makes professional criminals more careful. But it probably isn't as important as not having the guns around at all.
Thank you. Mr. Norris, thank you for calling, sir.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for being with us. This is Night Call in New York, and tonight our guest is Dr. Margaret Mead, and we're discussing, can we have bravery without guns? Dr. Mead, we're going to break momentarily for station identification, and then we'll be coming right back. Stay tuned for the Night Call Network.
More Night Call with Del Shields and guest Margaret Mead after station identification. Black is a red-blooded American color. The black showed the color of his blood in places like Vietnam and Korea and every other all-American battleground since the Revolution. Every time his country calls for help, he hears. But we don't seem to hear him when he calls. If black and white would listen with their hearts, they could hear each other. That's what Night Call is all about. It lets people air their views man to man, color to color, live from phones anywhere in the country. A syringe full of junk bites into black and white skin with the same ruining surge, and a black mother cries over her child just like a white one does. The problems are the same. The characters just have different colors. Night Call's person-to-person nationwide radio hookup lets the black and the white tell it like it is. Speak for yourself. Collect on Night Call. Area code 212-749-3311 or 866-5010 to Margaret Mead about bravery without guns. Again, Del Shields.
And on Night Call, we have a number of calls from Jackson, Mississippi, and from, Meshawki, Indiana, I hope, and from Forest Hills, Queens, and a number of other people who would like to talk to Dr. Mead. So let's first go to Forest Hills, where Mr. Herslod is listening to Night Call over radio station WLIB-FM. Welcome to Night Call, sir.
Hello, Mr. Shields.
Yes, sir.
I'd like to ask Dr. Mead this question. If it is true that the criminal element will be able to acquire weapons, and it seems to me that it would be true, what do you say to the man who says, I have a right to defend myself against these people who can acquire the weapons, law or no law? Or where do I stand as an honest citizen?
But you see, the criminal element are not, most of them, interested in killing people. They're interested in burglary, or they're interested in smuggling, or something of the sort.
Yes, but if they burgle my house with a gun, I can't stop them with a knife.
That's right. And if they know you have a gun, you're much more likely to get shot, and they're much more likely to bring a gun. This is the problem.
Don't you think they're much less likely to enter my house?
No, I don't. You see, we don't find that. What we find is that the more guns people have on either side, the law-abiding citizen and the criminal, the police and the citizen, the more guns they are, the
yes,
more violence there is.
I agree with you, but the police will have guns, too, and the criminals will have guns. This is not going to change in our country. Where does the average citizen stand, then?
Well, what we want for the police, we want police armed when it is necessary and with tremendous controls. The average citizen could do a lot of things, such as having a dog. A dog is a very much safer protection than a gun. And the average citizen can, at present, also put decent locks on his doors.
I agree with you. I agree with you on that, and I just wanted to be able to speak to people who had that same question.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for calling, sir.
Thank you.
We have a caller from Mishawaka, Indiana. I hope I've pronounced it correctly, who's listening to Night Call over WSBT in South Bend. Welcome to Night Call, sir. Yes, sir.
My question is not so much related to the topic of guns, although I'm 100% in favor of registering them and controlling them. I would like to ask Dr. Mead, in regards to each individual doing what they can to help alleviate this crisis, what can an individual do to help break down the bias in big business? What method can we do to break this thing down where, we'll say, the minority is employed and still has, a certain amount of problems?
Now, you're talking about employment now?
Yes, I am.
Well, of course, individuals can do different things depending on where they're placed in society. They can do one kind of thing as stockholders. If they're stockholders in a big business, they can do something else as customers. As good customers, they can begin to bring pressure on any store or any business with which they do business themselves. As members of organizations, they can get the members of their organization to take the same kind of steps. Because the most important thing now, we have a great many laws that demand fair employment and fair housing. But what we need in order to implement these is to make the people who are governed by them, the employer, the storekeeper, the landlord, feel the pressure of continuous, steady, untiring public opinion. And this is what individuals can do if they look very carefully at where they stand, what organizations they belong to, what church or what labor union or what fraternal order, who they buy with.
Yes, I see, and I do appreciate your time. I'll Let someone else make a comment.
If I may make another suggestion, sir, before you hang up, on Monday night, John Gordon of the National Urban Coalition will be our guest, and I'm more than certain that he would welcome that kind of question.
John Gordon?
Gardner.
Gardner.
Right, sir.
All right, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for being with us, sir. This is Night Call in New York, and we have Bravery Without Guns. Our guest is Dr. Margaret Mead, who is calling in from New York. Our area telephone call number is 866-5010. That's for New York. And our national telephone number, area code 212-749-3311. That's area code 212-749-3311. Dr. Mead, we'll welcome our next call from Jackson, Mississippi. Ms. Jameson is listening to Night Call over radio station WDIA. Welcome to Night Call.
Hello. Dr. Mead, I can't hear you too good, but I wanted to ask you a question concerning the television program that you were talking about concerning these gunfights and various pictures that come on. You have on various series a number of pictures that concern, you know, the bad guy and the good guy. Well, if you have various ages of children in your family and you want it, you know, they want to look at television, how could you steer them into looking at pictures that were more educated? And if they really wanted to, you know, keep looking at these various pictures where you have guns involved, how could you go about guiding them and, you know, telling them what the whole aim is behind these pictures where you may have the good guy to win in the end?
Well, I think it's very hard for individual parents if there are a great many programs of this sort on television and a child's playmates are seeing them. It's very hard to keep the children from seeing them. And if you forbid them, of course, they go and look at them somewhere else. So what we feel at present is that the most important thing is, if possible, for the mother or the father to be there when the children look at things and talk to them about them so that they don't look at them alone. A group of little children don't watch television with no grown-ups around. So you can explain to them that this is just a story, that if they're looking at Westerns. And if they're looking at violent pictures that look as if they were done by people they know, you can point out to them again that this is fiction, this is not real life. And if parents can do this, then they can take a good deal of the danger, not all of it, but a good deal of the damage and danger that is done to children. And of course, you can try to find programs that are exciting without guns, that have exciting adventures, exciting encounters with animals and in other countries, because these interest children also.
Thank you for calling, Ms. Jameson.
All right.
Thank you. We'll take our next call locally from New York. Ms. Ann Holohan is listening to Night Call over at WLIB-FM. Welcome to Night Call.
Good evening, Mr. Shields. I would like to ask Dr. Mead how long she thinks we have got in the way of time to take this action individually about writing to our senators and our congressmen and getting in touch with the news media.
It ought to be done immediately because some of the newspapers are reporting that opposition is building up. And what we need now is a wave from all over the country, from every single person, concerned person in the country, pouring into Congress.
Thank you for calling.
Thank you very much for telling me.
Thank you. Dr. Mead, we have about 30 seconds for you to give us kind of a wrap-up on Bravery Without Guns.
Well, we seem to have put almost all our emphasis in, from the questions that we've gotten, on the guns themselves. And I think this shows that the listeners are concerned primarily at this moment with gun legislation. That we feel that if we can get the gun legislation through, our children will be safer, our streets will be safer, we ourselves will be safer, and we will not pile up this enormous number of accidental deaths, of homicides, of murders that we're doing today. And it shows that although the other questions that I raised are also important, they don't seem to be as important at present to the American public as getting on with adequate gun control.
Dr. Mead, we want to thank you so much for being with us, and we certainly hope that you'll be coming back on Night Call again very soon.
Thank you.
Thank you for being with us. It's Friday night, and I'd like to use these closing moments to tell you about next week's lineup of guests and issues. On Monday night, Chairman John Garton of the National Urban Coalition joins us from Washington to talk about what he calls the necessary revolt of the moderate. On Tuesday night, Vice President David Truman of Columbia University on rebellious students and who he thinks must run the universities. Wednesday night, former Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee head H. Rapp Brown on black power and racial violence. On Thursday night, Jackie Robinson, who says the church is a joke when it comes to solving the problems of race relations, and we field questions on that point. Professor Kenneth Clark closes out next week on Friday night, and we'll be asking this young man who did most of the groundwork that led to the 1954 school desegregation decision if integration is now out of date. Next week promises to be a very interesting week, and we certainly hope that we can count on you to be with us. This is Del Shields in New York City. Have a good weekend, good night, and peace.
Night Call, the new nationwide listener call-in show on vital issues. Monday night, same time, same station, former Secretary of Health, Education, and Welfare, John Gardner, now chairman of the National Urban Coalition on Saving Our Cities. Listen Monday night. Discuss freely and responsibly your own personal opinions. Speak for yourself on Night Call. Produced by the United Methodist Church, presented with National Council of Churches, National Catholic Office for Radio and Television, and National Urban Coalition.